Thank you for listening to Abstract Illusions Radio. With each breath of air, gain new insights and inspirations as we explore and expose the different aspects of the human experience. Now with your host, Jennifer Hillman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hillman, and tonight we have a very wonderful guest who I met in interesting ways. I first saw this man dancing on stage doing the twist, and I knew from that moment he was a really very cool guy with a lot of a lot of passion for living. So I knew I had to have him on the show, especially after talking to him. Salvador Minci is an author and the creator of Feng Shui Life Mapping. It's an innovative approach for aligning your environment to your intentions. He has lots of training, so I'm going to let him talk about himself because I always like to hear it from the person myself. Salvador, thank you for being on air. It is awesome to see you and hear from you again. We met in San Diego at a book marketing conference that was awesome, and it was just like you went up there and you are just like passionate, and that's what they were looking for, and it really makes a difference in your life and in your work. So I know you've got a lot of energy towards this. So tell me, how did you get involved with Feng Shui and how did you get where you are?
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Jennifer. It's wonderful to be here. And thank you for reminding me of the Twist and Shout episode there. yeah, nothing like getting in front of 400 people that you don't know and dancing to set the stage. Well, I got into Feng Shui about 10 years ago. I've been obsessed with maps, finding maps and mapping out ways of understanding life and the way the body is mapped out with meridians and acupuncture and acupressure and those kind of things, and reflexology points, with any kind of map that would show or would hypothetically show the way maps would work, I was really fascinated by it. And somebody introduced me to a map in Feng Shui called the Bagua, which maps out how the energy flows within a specific space. It divides the space into 9 separate life areas, and by using the map you can identify how the energy is flowing in your life by how the energy is flowing or being able to move in your physical space. So I became really obsessed with this map, and I started finding teachers and different guides who could help me understand the way energy moved. I worked with a Native American shaman for a number of years, learned a lot about animals and the universal energies, the trees and nature. And I worked with a Taoist master for many years, and she taught, it was called the microcosmic orbit of the breath, and learning how the breath moves, and the breath called prana moves in our space as well. And then my feng shui training is, it's covered 10 years of different self-teachings and courses that I've taken as well. So that's how I got started. How I got started actually doing what I call feng shui life mapping is it takes feng shui and it takes vision boarding and it puts them together. So you create a vision board based on a feng shui map, and then that vision board becomes a blueprint for redesigning your space. And the first time I used this was when I decided I wanted to move to Italy. I went out and bought a whole bunch of magazines with the pictures of Italy, and I put them up in the travel section of my apartment. And within 3 months, I had a job, a visa, and an apartment waiting for me in Italy. And it was like, boom, 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 happened so fast. But the funny thing was for me was that I had always imagined that I would live in Rome, but I got the job and the apartment in Milan. So when I was taking down the pictures and I was packing to move to Italy, I noticed that all of the pictures that I had actually put up were specifically of Milan. They were La Galleria Milan. And so I was like, wow, this stuff is so powerful. Not only did it manifest what I wanted, but it manifested specifically what I had put up there. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting it in Rome. So I started using it more, and I've developed now the whole feng shui life mapping process. So
now, you do workshops with this, do you not? Or yes?
I do workshops. I teach a workshop about once or twice a month. It's how to, again, it's creating the vision board on a feng shui bagua, and then you use that vision board or life map as a blueprint for redesigning the house, and then give tips on how to create reflections in the house, so that basically you're turning your entire house into a vision board. So that when you walk into your home, you're always reminded of who you are, who you want to be, where you're going, and what you're doing with your life all at once.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, in my bagua of my house, I think it's funny because my romance area is actually in my garage.
Ah.
So I always make sure that's always nice, and I put things in twos. But you can also do this also in individual rooms, correct?
Right. You can lay the bagua over the entire house. You can lay it over each individual room. You can lay it over your desk. You can also lay it over the entire property with the garden, the house, and everything. So, yeah, you can lay that way you can set the intention in every one of those different levels. So, like, on my desk, I could put something like two hearts on the love and partnership area. And then in the whole house, like if it's the garage, I could put twos there. And then let's take it to the whole, let's say the garden was the love and partnership, and I could put something in the garden that represented love and partnerships. And that way I'm amplifying my intentions threefold in three different ways. So having love and partnerships in the garage is very interesting because it represents a lot of transience. So there's a lot of movement in the relationship area of your life, and it would be. I mean,
right.
It's like in those kind of situations, you want to create something that's going to create a real foundation. So I recommend like really heavy objects, like even just big rocks inside there, two really big rocks to represent a real like stabilizing, grounding force in your love and partnerships so that the garage energy doesn't keep your relationships moving and cycling so fast.
So. Well, I actually put storage, two very heavy shoving units in those areas. So, and they actually... I have it so they meet, so they're connected. So hopefully that will help. What other things, if they were to choose just like one room to do this, where would be the central room, or what room would you really recommend that they do this?
In feng shui, we talk about the big three, so it's hard to really pick one out, but I'll give you the big three. The big three are the bedroom, the kitchen, and the entrance. And I suppose if I was only going to talk about one tonight, I would talk about the entrance, because that is what's called the mouth of qi. It's where the energy is coming into one's life, and the ability for the energy to come into that space easily and effectively will affect everything else in your life. So people who have a front entrance that is blocked or that is dark or that is lined with dead plants or dead trees or any of those kind of things, those are situations that need to be improved and hopefully increase the energy that's coming into the entryway. Typically, the entryway also represents the career or life path. We often say career, even though it's more general. It's like, I like to say it's the purpose that our soul came into this existence is represented by that entrance space. And so we want to have an object there. We want it to reflect what our highest purpose is in life. So for some people that is just getting is having a job, and what I recommend is having a copy of their resume close at hand by their front entrance to remind them what their career is and to constantly putting more intention on improving their career or finding a job. For other people, it could be like having a radio show. So you could have something that represented your radio show on your front door so that every time you consciously came towards your front door, you would be consciously and subconsciously affirming the intention of having a really powerful and amazing radio show that's reaching across the world to help and assist people all over. So that would be, I guess, the first place would be the entryway.
Okay, and what about the kitchen?
The kitchen represents a person's health. So we think of the kitchen in terms of the physical health of a person. So when you go into the kitchen, go in there with the intention of sustaining, supporting, nurturing, and helping your own physical health. And what I often recommend doing is if a person gets cold or gets sick, go into the kitchen and clean out the refrigerator from top to bottom. Throw away anything that is expired. Throw out food that you're not going to eat. Throw out the leftovers and wipe it down from top to bottom. It's an energetic purge. Literally from top to bottom, as if going from your mouth all the way through your digestive system of purging out all of the negative energies and getting energy flowing. The second part of the kitchen is, of course, the stove, which is a very key play a key object in anyone's home. A stove represents one's ability to create, to invite power and energy into their life. And it's important that the stove be kept very clean. And it also, I always recommend using all four of the burners. A lot of people get in the habit of just using the same burner every time. And it's kind of like telling the universe that I'm only going to be open to the energetic flow of life through this one particular channel. And it's like when I go to my burner and when I go to my stove, it's like I want to remind the universe that I am open to any and all possibilities. I want abundance to come into my life through every possible avenue. So I always use a different burner every time I go to the stove so that I can reinforce that intention. And a lot of people go even to the extent of putting a mirror behind the stove. And what that does is it creates an energetic duplication so that instead of having four burners, you now have eight. I mean, imagine if your life was a jet plane. Instead of having four jet engines, you would then have eight jet engines. You'd be going a lot faster and a lot further in life. So that's the kitchen representing health. And it's just, I mean, it's such a sacred place to remind ourselves that the food we're making and the things that we're doing in there is all for the nourishment and improvement of our health. So.
Cool. And now, is it important to keep like the counters cleaned off, or is it okay to have like a coffee maker or teapot or something on there?
It's good. I mean, there's a fine line between comfort and clutter, I suppose, and everybody is going to feel differently about that. My rule with clutter is anything that is unused, unloved, or unfinished is clutter. And so if you have a kitchen appliance that you don't use anymore, it's become clutter. If you have a kitchen appliance that you don't love, it's and but I mean, let's say that you don't use it, but you still love it, then it's not clutter. But if you have something that you don't love, it's clutter. And if you have something that's broken, meaning that it's unfinished, let's say the blender doesn't actually go to all the different speeds, then it's unfinished. And what all three of those things do is it sucks energy out of us. So that every time you go into the kitchen, that little appliance that's sitting there that's unused, unloved, unfinished is actually sucking away energy that could be spent on other things, energy that could be devoted to creating health and to creating the things that we want to in life. So it's fine to have a counter that's just filled from left to right with appliances as long as you actually use them. And of course, it is important to keep it clean. Cleanliness is it's just good chi flow. I mean, whenever there's dirt, there's going to be a weighing down of the energy flowing. So, and it doesn't reinforce the intention of health when it's dirty. So.
Right. So with this, let's get a little bit more into the clutter because it's like I know a lot of people who have pots and pans and dishes and things that they've collected that are underneath in all the cabinets. Should those be, go through those and really organize them? Does that affect the chi as well?
Yes, it does. It's a great question too. Thank you. What happens oftentimes is the things that we don't use keep getting pushed to the back until we forget about them. And so it's good to once a year go through and pull out any of those items that are like, okay, I'm never going to use this, or I bought a new pan that's better than this and I can get rid of it. Because, I mean, think about like if you you only have two hands. So if one hand is holding something, then you only have one hand left to receive from the universe. So if you have two pots and they're equal and one of them is older and one of them is newer, I mean, it's basically taking up space that could be freed up to allow other new things to come into one's life. So I recommend once a year, go through all of the cabinets. And I mean, whenever I talk to people about clearing clutter, I like to emphasize the importance of doing one little space at a time. I'm talking about one drawer, one cabinet, one side of the refrigerator, doing that one day and then not coming back until the next day, because otherwise you can get the feeling of overwhelmed or, oh my God, I can't get through the whole kitchen. It's not good to approach the task like that. So just take one small aspect a day. Maybe one day just do the pots and pans drawer or something like that. But yeah, get rid of anything that's duplicated or broken or chipped or that you're no longer using to allow for new things to come into your life.
Excellent. Is there anything else that we need to know about the kitchen? Anything else that, for me, if my kitchen's not clean, I don't feel good. I mean, literally, the kitchen has to be cleaned. So I do my best just to make sure, because it's just like, ew.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
But is there anything else that needs to be considered about the kitchen?
I would say two things. I mean, we could really go in a couple of different directions. One topic that comes up a lot with kitchens is the trash. And a lot of people ask me, in terms of feng shui, what do you do with trash? And, you know, feng shui started thousands of years ago before we actually kept trash cans. People would take the trash out to a compost pile into the pig pen and automatically. So it wasn't like there is no set place in feng shui of where to put your trash, but there is an idea that you want to keep a trash can that has a lid on it to contain it. Otherwise, it's just like leaving this open black hole that's sucking energy into it. So it's always better to have a trash can that has a lid on it. And what I recommend is make a habit of taking out the trash once a week, whether it's full or not. Just make it a once a week, take out the trash, get it out of your house, and allow that space to now be opened up for new energies to come in. We need to recycle things in our life. And by that, I mean the rubbish going into the earth and such. And it's important to facilitate that. But it's important that we don't let them build up over time. And I know it sounds like I'm being a little clean freak here, but once a week, take out the trash and then just take a little wipey and wipe out the inside of the trash can to make sure there's no mold or any kind of things growing inside there. I've been in a lot of places that they don't do these things, and it builds up over time, and it can create not just a health hazard, but it really does create a stagnant energy and a stagnant chi that can lead to ill health. So that's the trash can. The second thing I would say is the sink, the drains. The drains need to be very clear as well. So if there's something blocking, if the garbage disposal is broken, get it fixed. If there's anything in the drain, be sure to clean it out, because we want to keep clear channels in our health, in the kitchen representing health. So does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I actually had a master teacher that part of the workshop I did with her is we actually did the chores. And one thing is all the trash goes out every day.
Right. Perfect. Nice.
And she said, regardless, they actually took out the trash several times a day. Number one, we had a lot of trash going on because there was about 10 people. There was like 6 people in it taking it, and there was 4 people teaching it. So there was a lot of trash being made there. And plus it was a core flush, so there was a lot of crying, and so a lot of Kleenex. And she also said with the Kleenex, you throw it away immediately after it's done, because you can get the bad – she literally can see black growing back on you if you hold on to a used Kleenex.
Wow.
And so I've gotten into the habit of it just letting it go, because you're letting go of what you've just released. So why would you hold on to it again? So this leads to the next wonderful room, which is the bedroom.
Yes, the bedroom, which is it's a very important room because it's where we actually go into an unconscious state. And in that unconscious state, we're opening up ourselves to a lot more of the channels and a lot more of the chi energy. So it's really important that the bedroom be a place that is peaceful and nourishing and calm. And for that reason, I do have a lot of suggestions around creating that. The first one is a reduction of reflective surfaces. And by that, I primarily mean mirrors. We don't want the mirror doors on closet doors that happen so often because, I like to tell people it's like your subconscious is noticing that there's this slight movement in the room, so it's never able to completely rest because it's conscious of this little movement going on in the room because of the mirrors. And it's just you're not able to rest. And it's also what they used to say in the olden times is that your spirit would leave your body at night when you slept. But if it left your body and saw itself in its reflection, it would become scared and then you would be having nightmares. So that was why they stopped putting mirrors in bedrooms back in the olden days. But anyway, reflective surfaces, just from a most energetic level, are very yang. They're very energetic. They double size the room. They amplify the energy of a space. So if you're trying to create a peaceful, restful area, mirrors are the opposite of what you need. And in addition to mirrors, any reflective surfaces. So if you have a TV, because when it's off, it kind of creates a mirror. That's a reflective surface that ideally is going to be covered at night. If not in a complete cupboard, you can put a sarong or a towel or some sort of tapestry over the TV at night. And then if people have a lot of vases or other objects like picture frames that have a glass cover on them that reflect, those are kind of things that you want to remove from the room as much as possible or mitigate as much as possible. If you have to have mirrors or reflective surfaces, you definitely want to make sure that they don't reflect back onto the bed at the bare minimum. So that's number one. Number two, of course, is the bed. It's important that the bed be comfortable, and people don't like to hear this, but nothing can go underneath the bed. Mm-hmm. It's imagine that when we go into our unconscious state, we are basically putting down roots and absorbing as if that becomes our foundation. So whatever it is that we are storing under our bed becomes the foundation of our unconscious thoughts through the entire evening. And so a lot of people put things under there that they no longer use or they've forgotten about or whatever, those things are actually seeping into our dreams and seeping into our unconscious throughout our rest and then affecting us through the day as well. So nothing goes under the bed. I have a lot of clients that I get over to their house and they store all of their shoes under the bed. And I think it's kind of a funny thought when you think about it. Like when a person goes to sleep, all of a sudden they have like 10 pairs of shoes running around, you know, and you've got like the dress mm-hmm. shoes, you've got the church shoes, and you've got all these different shoes going in different directions. So can't be restful. So
Nothing under the bed. Okay. So it's like I've always heard that it's best to have your head pointing north or northeast. Does it depend on...
There's different forms of feng shui. There's the compass form, there's the form school, and then there's the black hat, which is what I practice, or the westernized version. The compass school uses the astrology. When were you born? Where were the stars at that point? And they determine using that calculation which direction your head should be facing. And it's going to be individual to each individual person. So in the westernized form of feng shui, which I practice, what's important is that you have a solid wall, or at least at minimum a solid headboard above your head, so that the energy has a stabilizing factor. It's not good to put a bed in front of a window, like the head of the bed in front of a window, because what happens is the energy is literally just leaping out and out the window. This is a situation where couples will often end up breaking up because one or the other couple, is their energy is literally leaving the relationship and leaving the bed every night. So eventually that kind of energetic disparity creates issues in the relationship. It's not a good thing. So ideally the head has a very strong headboard, or it ideally is against a wall, a solid wall. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Cool. So is there anything else? I knew about nothing underneath the bed. Is it best to have the bed directly on the ground, like the platform beds or more towards the ground, or does that really matter?
You know, there are different schools of thought on that. Ideally, you want to have a good circular flow all the way around the bed. So having the bed directly on the floor is not the most ideal. But at the same time, having a really, really high bed is not the most ideal either. It needs to be somewhere that's comfortable for the person. There's different beds have different things. Things that I recommend when a person's trying to find a bed is first of all, the more curves as opposed to straight lines, curves are better. Curves represent a calmer feeling, whereas straight lines are more rigid. And not only will curves promote a sensuality in a relationship, but curves will also promote a calmer passage into sleep, not such a rigid fall asleep, wake up kind of style. So I recommend beds that have softer corners than hard edges. Wood beds, wooden legs, allow energy to ground more. I think about a tree. A tree has the roots mm-hmm. that ground. So the energy of a wood bed allows the energy of the person to ground more into the bed, which a lot of people really need. At the end of the day, they really need to just reground themselves because they operate so mentally. Now, people who are healers, people like massage therapists, Reiki masters, these kind of things, they're constantly sending energy out. So what they need is a bed that's going to help bring the energy back in. And those are typically more of the metal. Metal causes the energy to circle back in on the person. So the person who is sleeping on a metal frame is going to have, literally their energy is going to keep like wrapping around themselves so that they can recharge themselves while they sleep. So it kind of depends on what the person's day-to-day life is like, whether they want to have a metal bed or a wooden bed. And then going from there, it's just, you know, darker beds often are more yin, more of a yin energy. So, and again, there's yin and yang. Yang is more active and yin is more calm and peaceful. So the darker the bed, typically the more peaceful the sleep it's going to promote in that. And, you know, it just kind of takes it from there. If I have a person who's having a lot of trouble sleeping, I start by removing the reflective surfaces in their room. And then the second thing is creating a more comfortable, like getting a feather bed, getting a feather top to go on top of the bed and getting a fluffier comforter so that when they get in the bed, they feel more like they're sinking into like a nest kind of thing. That typically helps. And then the second thing is, of course, with the sounds and making sure there's no stray sounds coming in from the street noise or whatever else is going on, helps to promote the sleep as well. So bed is really important. It is also a little bit individualized. What I do love to say about beds as far as relationships go, and we're coming up to Valentine's Day, so I've been thinking a lot about relationships. I hope I'm not spending too much time on that. But in terms of beds and relationships, there needs to be equality established by the bed to show that there's equality in a relationship. So if a person is single and they want to invite somebody into their life as a partner, they need to have equality on either side. So if there's a nightstand on one side, I highly recommend a nightstand on the other side as well to show that whoever's coming is not just an overnight guest, but they actually have a place in your life. And the same thing goes if there's a night light. If there's a light on one of the nightstands, there should be a light on the other stand as well, so that both people in the relationship have equality. I also recommend two pillows, making sure there's at least two pillows so that each person has their own pillow. And If a person is used to sleeping in the center, but they want to be in a relationship, it's a good idea to start getting used to sleeping on one side and reserving that other side for their partner. And they can switch back and forth. They don't have to always sleep on one side, but that way they're psychically and unconsciously creating the space for that person to come into their life. And now if a person is in a relationship, those things are also important to create equality in the relationship. One common problem I find with space issues is that people push their bed all the way against a wall. Like one side of the bed will be pushed up against the wall. And what that means is like one person literally doesn't have equal access in the relationship. They have to climb over the other person and they have to climb out of the bed a different way. So even creating 2 or 3 inches from the wall to give that person just a little bit of space will completely shift the relationship to a different level. So, wow, I could just talk about beds forever. But what are there other things about the bedroom that you wanted to talk about?
Just whatever. I mean, this is just fascinating listening to you. So what else do you have to say?
Well, I will say twos. I like to always recommend objects in twos in relationship. If a person wants to have a relationship with one other person, I'm not against people that have multiple relationships at all or non-monogamy, whatever a person's thing. But if a person wants to establish the idea of a partnership in a relationship, then objects, everything in the room needs to point to two. It's interesting how often I will find, I've had two clients recently, both who wanted me to deal with the situation where they felt like their partner was cheating on them. And we went in the bedroom and they had 3 pictures over the bed. And I said, well, you're psych. I know. It's
wow.
Right. Obvious. It's like, well, you've invited a third energy into your relationship. So even if the partner isn't cheating on her, which he may not have been, even she was still getting the feeling like he was, because she was psychically picking up that there's this third entity, there's this third energy in their life. The same thing within the photos. I mean, all of the photos and artwork inside of a bedroom should really convey a love and peace and calm and nurturing. And I went into this one guy's house who he was complaining about being single forever and ever and ever. And he had a picture. I think it's a Monet. It's the Reaper. I don't know if you know it, but it's this picture of this guy with this big, you know, what do they call that? That big blade thing. And he's reaping the field. And he said that he just loved the colors and the idea of him like taking in the harvest. And I said, you know, that is a positive twist, but it doesn't promote a relationship. You know, it's like, it's kind of the opposite. So let's move that to maybe a creativity section or somewhere out of the bedroom, to allow you to start dating. So images inside the bedroom need to promote the relationship as well. So I like to suggest people have images that have images of two, like 2 elephants or 2 doves or 2 rainbows or 2 whatever your thing is. But having 2 and not 3 or not just 1. I have another client. She was single for a really, really long time. And we went into her bedroom, and above her bed, she had this really beautiful picture of a woman, just one single woman, just kind of laying on this chaise lounge. And I was like, it's a great picture, but what it's doing is promoting, and it's saying that this space is reserved for one person. And this person is the one person that you're going to have as your life. If you want to be in a relationship, consciously remind yourself energetically of a relationship and everything that you see. So she took that down, and I don't know what she ended up putting in there eventually, but the single woman in picture moved out of the bedroom. So,
well, now I'm questioning. I actually took a photograph of an angel, and that's in my bedroom. So is that a good image or not?
I think it is a good image. It would give me the feeling of being guided and protected by angels when I was asleep, or being protected by my higher self or my higher guides. So I think that's great. I wouldn't have it directly over the bed necessarily.
No.
Right. But then if it's in the bedroom, it would connote the idea of an angel protecting you. So
okay. Somebody what if you've got a little house, but a lot of people, so everybody's stuff is like in everybody's room? What do you suggest when you don't have a lot of storage and everybody is just like not wanting to let go? What do you suggest for that?
I suggest moving.
Basically, yeah. That would be the easiest, or I would say garage sale.
Yeah, garage sale. I mean, it's a great question, and I can't even tell you the number of times that I've been invited to someone's home to feng shui by the wife, and the husband didn't know I was coming, and she didn't tell me that she was married, and that the real issue was she didn't like his decorations. And she wanted me to basically tell him to move his stuff or change his decoration style. It's a very funny situation to be caught in. The easiest way and the only way you can deal with that, and what I typically say is that you need to address it. You need to, as a partnership, go into every object and give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. Because if something is in your space that is brought in by your roommate or by your partner or whomever that you really don't like, then every time you come in, it's creating a bitterness, it's creating a bad energy between you and that roommate. So it's important to confront the elephant in the room, talk to the roommate, find out what kind of compromise can be made. I'm sure that maybe it can be moved to a different area, or it can be decorated or covered in a way, or perhaps that person isn't really even attached to it and just hadn't thought to get rid of it. But it's so important to address each and every one of those individual little pieces. And I'm talking about the plant that nobody thinks anybody cares about. Like, really talk about each and every single thing and make sure that everybody in the living in the space isn't being negatively affected by the energy of somebody else's stuff, that they just don't want to be unpolite and say something. It's more impolite not to say something and to have that bitterness develop towards that person. And it's just an even feeling. I find it often happens around televisions too, where one person will be really more of a TV watcher than the other person. And so it becomes a bit of a challenge. Where do you put the TV and how loud can it be and what days can it be on and so on and so forth. And, you know, they make headphones now for TVs. So I always recommend just get the person who watches TV all the time a set of headphones, and they can watch TV and listen to it without disturbing and having the whole place be watching TV. And secondly, create a cabinet for it, or just simply cover the TV when it's not in use, and make an agreement that, you know, when the TV is off, then we get to put this beautiful tapestry and we get to look at the image of the Bahamas or something or whatever it is. So it's a great question. What do you do about your roommate's stuff that's in your space? And I think the only way you can deal with it is to, as a roommates or as living together, go through each object and decide what goes, what stays, and what can we do with the stuff that we can't part with. So,
Do you have any suggestions about, you have objects in your house, you're not sure if it should go or not? I mean, I've always been told, hold it to your heart, and if it feels good, then keep it. But if it doesn't, then you know it's time to go.
Wow, I love that. I really love that idea, hold it to your heart. If you feel, I think that's a great idea. I mean, what I suggest doing is placing the left hand on the object, or placing it in the left hand, and then just asking yourself, what does this object mean to me? What is it attached to? What is it attached to emotionally and historically and psychologically? And then determine, are we done? Are we ready to move on from that space? And if so, then move on. If not, there was a gimmick one person came up to where you have a space, whether it's in a closet or it's under a cupboard or something, where you put such objects that are kind of in the unknown. You put them in that object and you go a month. And if you go that whole month without even thinking about that object, then yeah, it's time to let it go. But if you go at some point during that month, you're like, hey, where is that? Oh, it's in that pot. And you go get it out. Then you know it's still worth keeping.
That's really good. Now, another question that is always up there. And again, it's a storage question of you've got too many DVDs. You don't want to get rid of any of your DVDs or your videos or your music, and you're running out of space. Do you suggest download them onto your computer and get rid of the original, or
yeah.
What do you suggest?
I mean, today's world is like we're moving more and more to a hard drive world where everything's on hard drive. I would say it for twofold. I mean, if you download it all to your hard drives now and then sell it, you can sell it on eBay and still make money. I mean,
there's
going to be a day when nobody even wants the CDs and DVDs, but right now you could probably still at least make a couple dollars off of each one of those things. So get it while the getting's good. I say, get rid of it though.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it's like retro is really big. So it's like the rodeo phones are coming back and
right.
It's like, I should have kept mine. I had a really old, beautiful one, and it's like I got rid of it a long time ago. And it's like it's very interesting. I think a lot of people now are keeping what we would call junk because now, number one, it could be an antique.
Right.
Number two, it may be worth something.
It may be.
And it may be coming back in style. So it's very interesting, even with clothes. That's a huge thing with people is clothes. Close.
Yes, it is. I mean, what I would say about that is, again, getting back to the three rules of clutter. If it's unused, unloved, or unfinished, then it's clutter and it should go. If it's something that you really love, like, I'll just be honest. I have this old Mickey Mouse that I got when I was a kid. You know, I don't use it anymore, but I love it. And I bet that I could probably sell it for a lot of money, and I'm glad I hung on to it. But I have a feeling that it's probably worth more money simply because I loved it, so I took good care of it, and I gave it a home, rather than just holding on to something because one day it might be worth something. Do you know? I wouldn't take that risk. And with clothes, what I recommend doing, I love like putting on a fashion show with your friends. I actually hired a woman to be a, what do they call it, a wardrobe consultant, where she came over and I looked at my closet and I'm like, you're not going to throw away any of my clothes. I don't have a lot of clothes. I'm a guy. I have like four different pairs of pants. I have four shirts. You know, we threw out a whole garbage bag of clothes. Because she went through there and she showed me how to look at it in a way, like how often do I use it? And what it was is like I needed someone to give me permission to let go of it. I was like, oh, but I wore it to this thing and you never know, I might get invited to something. I was like, oh, please buy a new one, you know? We have a lot of, here in San Francisco, we have a lot of clothes recycling places where you could go in and they will give you, you know, it's not a lot of money, but you can end up getting like $30 and then you can spend that to buy something new for yourself as well. So it can be fun. But anyway, doing a little fashion show with your friends where you, you know, give a thumbs up or thumbs down, if, like it's too tight or it's the wrong color or it has that stain or it's missing a button, get rid of it. Time to go.
Yep. That's something else that the Master Teacher, which is Star Fuentes, by the way, if anybody's wondering, great programs. She gives really great workshops. You want somebody to kick your butt and get you really moving forward, see Star.
What's the name again? Star Fuentes?
Fuentes.
Okay.
She's located in Arkansas or Texas. It just depends. Hot Springs. So. Okay. It's really cool. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask about the bedroom is, and it just popped in my head again, what about crystals? Good to put them in underneath the mattress, the pillows, or is it not good things?
There can be specific, like, oh, I see what you mean. Like, not a, like a crystal sphere, but like a topaz or a labradorite or something.
Right,
like that.
Some kind of gem that has a little energy that you would like to... I mean, there's certain stones that actually help you dream.
Right.
It's actually above my bed. I actually have a hawk feather, an owl feather, hummingbird feather.
Wow.
And it all incorporates, well, hummingbird is joy, owl is for getting prophetic dreams, and then the hawk, of course, is messengers.
Right.
So I had that actually over my bed. That's just something I was guided to do. So I was just wondering, what about crystals as well?
You know, crystals do, like, each, every, as you know, like, every crystal in itself has a purpose, just like a human being has a purpose in life. Each crystal has its individual purpose, and that crystal's purpose might be to help you or help a person dream or feel better or get a certain message during their dreams. I had one particular woman where we were meditating on the crystal to try to find its purpose, and I got a very clear image that this crystal needed to be under the bed. And I said, I want you to put this under the bed for the next month, and then after a month, revisit it and see if it still wants to be there, and move it that way. You know, there is the idea of, I don't tell a lot of people this, but the idea of creating a little treasure chest underneath your bed. Like, and inside of that treasure chest, you would put the things that you do want to invite into your life and into your dreams, such as that crystal or whatever it is, and that would kind of stand as your touchstone. So after you go to sleep, you would touch off of that and then go into your unconsciousness and invite all of those different things into one's life. So I'm all for crystals. I believe that they should be revisited, and I'm sure you could probably talk more about using crystals and keeping them clean and making sure that energies like that. I also, one of the things that I recommend for people who have trouble sleeping is to put sea salt in cups in the four corners of the room, because that draws the energy in and pulls the energies and grounds the energies of the room, so that inside of that room, the energies have all been, all the negative energies have been pulled out and pulled down. And it's important to take that salt afterwards and throw it away outside of the house, not inside of the house. But cleaning the crystals kind of in that same realm, like if a person's going to be inviting them this into their unconsciousness, it's important to make sure that it has it's been washed under cold water, washed under water, and cleaned thoroughly before placed in such a sacred place. I don't know if you want to say any more about crystals or particular.
Well, the other thing is a couple things. Number one, you can always recharge the energy of it by putting it in the sunlight, in the moonlight, full moon. And the other thing is make sure it is connected to you by holding it in your hand.
Right.
And making sure that it's truly connected to you, because there's been some stones that I've held and it's like, no way. You know, the energy's just like, not for me.
Right.
And I was really lucky to actually have a leprechaun show me how to charge a stone with my hands.
Wow.
And it was like going up and down an elevator. It was a really cool experience. But you just focus the energy and you focus on your heart in your hands with the stone in your left hand, covered by the right, in front of your heart. Focus on it and ask it to invite it into your heart space.
Okay.
And then it just literally, the energy goes down your body, then back up, and then back into the stone. And if it feels good while you're doing that, then that stone really is truly yours. But if you feel any bumps or any hiccups, as he called it, that stone's not really for you.
Wow. Okay. I love it. I have some crystals here. I can't wait to try that.
You're welcome. Stones really do have a lot of power. I've got crystals all over my house, and I generally collect them once a month and put them out in the full moon.
Yeah.
I clean them and then put them out in the moonlight for 24 hours so they get the sunlight and the moonlight.
Wow.
To purify them and recharge them. But if you go to the hot springs, make sure they take you crystal hunting, because you can get some beautiful crystals right out of the ground. And you want to talk about, that's a trip to find your own crystals.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So I highly recommend you doing that. So Arkansas has one of the major veins for crystals and actually diamonds.
Right. Wow. Cool.
So there's a couple places you can go in Arkansas for diamonds and, crystals. Literally, you can find them on the side of the road.
Wow.
So so I wanted to check in. And also the other thing is cleansing the house, smudging, not smudging. How do you cleanse the energy if you're doing it yourself?
You know, feng shui has very particular ceremonies for cleansing. I do incorporate, I was trained by a Native American shaman, so I do the smudging. I use a hawk's feather and sage, white sage. Mm-hmm. But I find, honestly, the most effective energy cleanser is a bell. Using a bell, and I use a Tibetan singing bowl. And I basically create the vibration, and they literally just go from every corner and around every object in the space to tone it back to an equalized energy level. And I find that, I have always found that to be the most powerful in blessing and cleansing a space.
Okay. Now, if somebody doesn't have a actual bowl, mm-hmm. can they just
play a CD
of singing bowls? Would that do it?
Yes, I would say definitely. And while doing it, like literally cupping the hands as if picking up that music and then splashing it into each of the different corners and around each of the different objects. So whatever, however the sound is being created, even if it's just the chimes on a phone. That works. Or it doesn't have to be a Tibetan bowl. It can be any kind of bell. Any kind of bell creates that tone, which creates an equalization of the sound. So,
Now, what about, I have many altars that I have throughout the house. Good, bad?
Always very good. Oh, it's very, very, very good. And it is also good to occasionally go through and clean the altar, both energetically and just to wipe down all the objects and spend some time giving. I'm sure you do, but a lot of people will create an altar. And then, like, I was at this store today, and in the store they had created this altar to I forget who it was. Ganesh. They had a Ganesh altar, but they had just literally over maybe a decade just kept piling stuff onto this altar, and they didn't want to touch it, you know. And I'm like, you know what? It needs love. It needs attention. It needs the focus of fresh energy all around it. So I didn't say anything to them, but it felt heavy. It didn't feel like it was actually promoting energy in the space. It felt like it was actually taking energy out. So I'm all for altars. I just do recommend that they are kept refreshed with love, both energetically and like physically, just cleaning each of the different objects as well. Does that make sense? Do you want to?
Yeah.
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 Didn't know.
I have one actually in my entryway, and then actually I have one in my bedroom, but I have it like all throughout the house. I have little altars, and yes, I do clean them.
Right.
Because a lot of them have, I try and have the four or five elements, depending on which way you go, but right. on each altar. So
in feng shui, we have five elements. And
yes.
The four elements, what four elements are you?
Air, water, fire, earth.
Okay. Air. Okay. In feng shui, they don't consider the air. They go with water, wood, fire, metal, and what am I missing? Water, earth, last. Water turns into wood. Wood feeds fire. Fire creates earth. Earth creates metal. Those are the five elements in the Chinese system. So, whatever person creates is a balance. Is that so?
It's like it really is whatever you're guided to
right.
do. Really,
right?
As well. We are just almost out of time, but. We could travel so much, but I do want to touch on, since they said we can go a little bit long, a little bit more about the visualization in the law of attraction. Right. I have a lot of people that ask the question, okay, what's the best way to do it? And I agree with the visualization, the boards, they're great. And I usually do it, but I put it away. I don't, if I'm looking at it all the time, it's like I'm holding on to the energy too long.
Okay.
So if I do it, say, yes, this is it, and I put it away, then it happens.
Right. I totally know what you mean. And I can't tell you the number of times I've created a feng shui life map, put it away, and then months later found the map again. And I was like, oh, my God, that came true. Excuse me. Yes. The best way to activate the law of attraction is through visuals, because the way the brain chemistry works is that visual images require more brain activity, and we are by nature more visually oriented. So imagine that whenever we use visuals, we're actually using a part of our brain that we've developed more, and we're using more of our brain in doing it. And the way it works, just a real quick, I don't know how much time we have, but a real quick way of putting it is that law of attraction is basically activating the reticular brain. And the reticular brain is the part of the brain that filters out information, so that all of this information that our senses are picking up, the heat, the temperature, the how high the ceiling is, how the carpet feels under our feet, everything, it's being filtered out, and our reticular brain is determining what goes to our conscious. And what we decide, we tell the reticular brain what we want to pay attention to. So the law of attraction is initiated first by our consciously saying, we want to pay attention to this image, and we use an image to activate it more powerfully. So let's say cruise ships. All of a sudden now the reticular brain is tuned into cruise ship, and it's going to be looking in every direction and always for anything that can kind of direct our energies towards a cruise ship. So it might be we see a billboard, we'll see an advertisement, we'll overhear somebody having a conversation, and so on. And so the reticular brain is now activated, and it's activating us to look for and find elements that resemble that thing that we are looking for. The second part of the law of attraction is that it energetically puts us in tune with that which we are looking for. So on the one hand, we're physically creating, we're physically looking for the billboard and things like that, but because we are energetically thinking cruise ship, we're now sending out an energetic wave that will magnetically draw towards us that same energetic pattern from other places. And this is where we start to get into the more new agey things where, you know, all of a sudden a friend calls you up and starts talking about a cruise ship, or mm-hmm. you win a free ticket to go on a cruise, and these kind of things happen. So it's a two-part path. The first is activating the reticular brain through visual imagery, and the second is once you're into that, allowing the energetic vibration to be sent out and draw back to yourself that which you're trying to draw into your life. And that's basically how the law of attraction works.
So is there any other tips there are some people that it's like you have to look at it every day or it's not going to work. It's like they have it up but like I said, it's like my guidance has always said, well, if it's always there and you're holding on to it, you're blocking the energy for it actually to show up.
Right. I think it's going to be different for every situation though too. I mean, I don't know if I can give a clear cut look at it 3 minutes a day kind of a thing, but I would suggest looking at the images at least once a day for the first 2 weeks. For the first 2 weeks, making sure that that image is somewhere that you're going to see it every day. And then after that 2 weeks, let it kind of float into your subconscious. My biggest tip for working with the law of attraction is simply this. Forget about how. Concentrate on the what. Because too many people think, okay, this is what I want to create in my life. So they start thinking, how am I going to make it? Oh, maybe if I call this person, and they start doing these to-do lists and they start planning and scheming. Well, miracles and the universe don't operate like this. They have way wider variety of possibilities out there. So the universe is not concerned with how. It's only concerned with what. So whenever I find myself thinking about how do I make this thing happen in my life, I stop and I just spend a minute visualizing what. What is it I want to imagine? And what I do in that visualization is to actually visualize myself in the experience of whatever it is that I'm wishing to create. And really going with the feeling of it and all that stuff. And is just giving into that feeling and forgetting all about how and just saying, you know what, I don't know how this is going to happen, but this is what I want in my life. And that's the biggest trick.
The biggest trick is you said it right there, is feel it. Feel it. Yourself, sense it, you know, taste it, see yourself in it, feel it. It's like if you've got even just a fabric or something that you will be seeing there. Like if you're going somewhere with a palm tree, try and get a palm tree leaf or something and hold it and just really sense it. If you're going to go somewhere with like with sea air or something, try and have a cup of salt there so you can smell the sea air.
Exactly.
So you can have all the senses already with you.
And that is exactly what the whole feng shui life mapping idea is so that when a person goes into their home, everywhere they look in their home is reminding them in a sensual and a visual way of what it is that they are drawing into their life. Whether it's that palm tree leaf, or whether it's the sea breeze, or that candle that has a sea scent to it, or if it's, you know, a lot of people tell me they want to have their own home. So what I tell them is go buy a key. Go to the hardware store and buy a key and put it in the abundance area of the house, and which is, you know, when you go in the front door, it's going to be the far left corner of the house. Put the key over in that corner, maybe on a little red string or maybe on a little keychain, to remind yourself every time you see it that, oh, this is going to be my new home. I've got a key to my new house. And this way, and you can do this in every one of the areas of your house. And creating basically a 3D vision board that's sending you on a very exciting visual journey, a sensual journey, every time you go into your house.
And there's a lot of authors out there. And what I did was I made the cover.
Yes.
And I wrapped it around another book that was a bestseller. So it's like, Okay.
Yes.
There's my book. I can physically hold the book. And I can flip through. And I actually put it around Rumi. So you can't go wrong with Rumi. And I just like, yes, there's a lot of spiritual wisdom and very bright energy that's bringing, and that's the kind of book that I wanted. Mm-hmm. I am creating, so I have that 3D image and the actual cover for the book.
Right.
And things are, once my computer gets fixed, things will start moving forward on that. So,
awesome.
But that's a suggestion also for anyone who's writing the book.
Right.
Get the cover done.
Or if whenever you see a magazine that has a cover that you would like to be featured in, like right now, I know it sounds silly, but Time Magazine just came out with their Person of the Year. So I basically took that and I put my picture on it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be the Person of the Year. Why not? I love being the Person of the Year. Time Magazine voted me Person of the Year. And you know, it's kind of fun, but it's also putting me into the mindset of this is what's possible out there too.
So. I did it for Rolling Stone.
Did you?
Awesome. Yeah.
What was the title?
Something about, I can't even remember because I did it a while. I can't even remember. Something about abstract illusions changing or combining music and spirituality or something to that effect.
Right.
Combining the arts and spirituality together. I can't even remember, but I did do an actual cover with my photo, with all the headlines, even the, you know, concerts coming up, the whole deal. It was a complete Rolling Stone, because I've always wanted to be on Rolling Stone, and I know I will be someday. So,
hey. Amen.
And you'll be on Time Magazine, so we're all good to go.
Yeah.
Now, let everybody know how they can get in touch with you and how they get your book.
Thank you. My website is fengshuilifemapping.com. And on that site, you'll find a link to go to my newsletter. And if a person signs up for my newsletter, they get a free essay on how to basically start applying the principles of feng shui immediately. And I send out a newsletter twice a month that gives feng shui tips and suggestions. My book is available on lulu.com, and it is called Feng Shui Life Mapping. And it's going to be released to amazon.com either this week or next week. It's kind of, you know how that works. It's kind of a,
yeah,
a little lag time there. But it is now available, and at that point it'll also start being available in bookstores and all around town too. And my workshops, I'm doing workshops all over California right now, but I am available to go do workshops elsewhere if anybody would like to invite me. I teach the feng shui life mapping technique of combining feng shui and vision boarding, as well as speaking on the law of attraction and visualization and how to incorporate that in as well. So that's the easiest way. My email address is salvatore@fengshuilifemapping.com. I'd love to hear from everybody. And I also have a Facebook fan page, which is Facebook.com/fengshuilifemapping. And a lot of people share their stories of things that are happening with them, as well as their life maps. And it also has an active list of events that are coming up that anybody can participate in. So I love to keep in touch with people. I also love to hear the questions and hear the stories about what's happening in people's lives with feng shui and with visualization and feng shui life mapping. So I totally want to open the doors to anybody who's interested in reaching out. I would love to hear from you. So,
And with that, you can understand why I wanted Salvador on, because of his wonderful energy. And perhaps if he comes to your town, he will do the twist, because he is a wonderful dancer.
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind.
And with that, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Until next time, many blessings and good night.
Good night. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.